to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to Shoot the Defence, brought to you by the FNX Network and My Sportswear. I'm your host, Stel, and joining me tonight are two very special guests. Firstly, celebrity agent and head of Lucky 7 Management, Jay Austin, and football reporter for the Daily Mirror, Adrian Kajumba. Gents, welcome to Shoot the Defence. Great to have you on.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be on.
Thank you. It's exciting to be on.
Excellent. Wonderful. Well, gents, let's start off with England, because they got their World Cup qualifying campaign, the new era under Sam Allardyce, up and running with a 1-0 victory in Slovakia. Adam Lallana's injury time goal gave England the deserved win, although not for the first time. The Three Lions' performance was criticised by many. Now, Adrian, you were at the game, mate. What did you make of England's approach before and after Skirtle sending off?
Well, before, I think a lot of people watching that game, and as it felt being in the stadium, it was very much just like watching some of the frustrating games for England in Euro 2016. You know, Slovakia sat deep, England had a lot of the ball, but there was no real pace, no intensity, no energy to their play. They were just knocking it around side to side, hardly created any chances. You know, when I think back now, with just a couple of little flashpoints that they had, so really in the first hour. Skirtle went off in the 57th minute, and, you know, naturally that's going to give the side with the extra one-man advantage, an advantage, having the extra man. But what was quite good, and I did give Sam Allardyce credit for this, is he didn't just leave it to the 11 players on the pitch to try and change the game. As soon as he spotted the opportunity of England having the extra man, he threw on, in the end, it was three attacking subs. First, Dele Alli, who helped liven things up for England and really quicken up their play. He was an excellent link between the midfield and the attack, which is what they were struggling with before, because Rooney, for example, was dropping back too deep. And then he chucked on Theo Walcott. It took a little while to get going. Offside a couple of times in a couple of really promising situations. And then Daniel Sturridge came on. Everyone knows Daniel Sturridge likes to shoot, very attacking player. And in the end, England did deserve to nick it at the end with Lallana's goal. The goal was in the 95th minute when the referee and the officials had signalled there'd be 4 minutes of added on time. England did deserve it in the end.
Absolutely. And the thing is, with Sam Allardyce, it seems that already he's playing an expansive style. You know, with Roy Hodgson, there was a lot of criticism about, you know, him being very mundane and playing a system that really doesn't suit many of the players. But Allardyce seems to have got it down to a T at the moment, hasn't he?
I must admit, from what I saw on Sunday, it's probably a little bit too early to talk about him or to really draw too many conclusions about him changing the style of play, just because of the way that game was. You know, the onus was really on England, and got to be said, they did struggle for a while to break Slovakia down. Mm-hmm. Sam Allardyce obviously has a reputation for playing long ball football. He can't play that with this England side unless he picks Andy Carroll. So, you know, it wasn't like we could come away from that game on Sunday and say Sam Allardyce is really doing this differently or he's really sticking to his reputation. So style-wise, and especially then when Slovakia went down to 10 men, it was such one-way traffic. A little bit too early, I think, just yet to draw too many conclusions about any real change in style from England, I think.
Now, Jay, Wayne Rooney is the most talked about player at the moment. Now, opinions are divided as to whether or not he should be selected in the squad, let alone the starting 11. Which side of the fence are you on, mate?
Oh, my God. I'm glad you asked that question, because I'm on the fence that I wouldn't have him in the squad. I might get a lot of hate on social media for this, but because obviously you've got a massive fan base. But personally, I think you should pick players on form for international duty. I don't think he's on form for club overall. And I don't think he's been in form for Manchester United properly over the last sort of year or so. That's my personal opinion. And also, I think the FA shouldn't have appointed Big Sam. He wouldn't have even been in my shortlist. But I think it was a situation where he was appointed due to a bad bunch. He was, you know, sort of the best of a bad bunch, if I'm honest, who realistically was available. But yeah, we're back to Rooney. I wouldn't have had him in the squad. You know, I'm surprised that Rashford wasn't included. I really am. He's been obviously, you know, exciting and exhilarating form for club and also for under 21s tonight, hasn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah, scored a hat trick tonight, didn't he?
Yeah, he's been on fire. You know, and obviously with Rashford, he's unpredictable. You know, I've played football, and with Marcus Rashford, what you get, you don't know what you get with him. He's so unpredictable. He's got pace. He's got that raw ability. And I think that's what England need a bit. You know, we were a bit predictable, I thought, on Sunday. Didn't really change. The stats said it as well. Didn't really change much. You know, nothing. The passes were a little bit different. The amount that they had against Slovakia on Sunday compared to the summer. The possession was, I believe, a little bit more. But I think we had less shots on target, though. It was just it was predictable that Rooney was going to play. You know, is he brave enough to drop him? I don't think Big Sam is.
The thing is, I mean, Adrian, you can probably answer this one better than all of us, really. I mean, Sam Allardyce said something that will be included in a soundbite montage if he fails, and that being, it's not for me to say where Wayne Rooney plays. Now, do you think there's some sort of coded message in that? I mean, a lot of people believe Rooney has a lot of friends who, in inverted commas, make the decisions.
Well, I mean, it was all, once Lallana scored, Sunday was going, you know, Sam Allardyce could reflect on a sort of job well done, quite a satisfying day in the end. You know, his first game as England manager, getting on the World Cup qualifying campaign off to a winning start. And then he said that, you know, in his post-match interviews. And, you know, it was, the thing it reminded me of, actually, is that the podcast you guys did with Leon Knight and Tony Bailey, which you put out last week, mm-hmm. in which Leon Knight was talking about, you know, his experiences of a player, obviously. And he mentioned, you know, they were talking about the rise of player power almost, and players only now cottoning on to the fact that they hold so much power. And that comment from Sam Allardyce just kind of made me think about what Leon Knight was saying. And you can't be in, a manager cannot be in a situation where a player feels he can dictate what he does. Sam Allardyce, by making that comment, sounds almost as if he's grateful to be managing somebody like Wayne Rooney. When you're England manager, whether you think something like that or not, you have to give off the impression that you're the boss. You fully deserve to be in that position, making a decision, telling players, no matter how big they are, which club they pay for, how much money they earn, how much they work, that they do what you say. So that was quite worrying to hear. And you know, I think it's one thing for Allardyce to think it; it's a completely different thing to say it. And he's effectively, you know, he caused himself problems publicly with the fans and possibly within the dressing room as well by saying something like that.
Wayne Rooney has got, you know, the most England goals at the moment. He's the England captain. What is it going to take for him not to get picked, do you think?
Possibly losing his Manchester United place, which I expect will happen towards the end of this year, probably at the start of next season. I think once, you know, similarly to Rashford, I think maybe once he's not finding himself in the Manchester United team every week, then that almost gives, you know, Sam Allardyce, the international manager, a bit of a get-out.
Mm, fair enough. And Jay, how would you play an England system without Wayne Rooney?
Well, you know, my opinion on it is, so I can quickly touch on it. I think the England team, as a fan, we need to see attacking football, and my choice would have been Redknapp as manager temporarily, not long term, but just a short term problem to fix, you know, and have people like Rio Ferdinand, Steven Gerrard behind the scenes coaching, and then they would. I like to see a bit more attacking football. You know, I think, you know, even under Roy Hodgson, Steve McLaren, we just played so much negative football and got settled for a 1-0 win. I'd rather go and see like a 4-3 or if we come up against a big powerhouse in Europe or in the world like Brazil, Argentina, go down fighting and lose 4-3 rather than lose 1-0 or, you know, or play very, very poorly. Without Rooney, you know, I'd like to see Rashford, Sturridge, you know, and Vardy free up front. You know, I mean, I don't know what more Vardy's got to do. You know, he started off scoring, hasn't he, this season? Just doesn't seem to be. Maybe it's his face doesn't fit in the setup. I don't know, but you know, Harry Kane's not in form at the minute, and he's playing. It's just a strange one when it comes to England. They seem to pick players out of form at the minute, and it's frustrating to see that. I always believe you should pick players not on form, not on reputation. You know, that's my personal opinion, and for me, Rooney would not even be in the squad. I've got a feeling that once he gets an injury at club level, then that's Mourinho's excuse, you know, keep a winning team, and they'd be benched, you know, for four or five games in a row, I think, at Man United, and then that would be a test whether Sam's brave enough to drop him. But I don't think Sam is. I cannot see him getting dropped for England, because I think that commercially they have to have him involved. That's my opinion. Mm. So a team without Rooney, I can't see it happening at the minute for England. You know, that's the answer to that one. I can't see it happening. But if it was me, or if a team without Rooney, I'd be playing, you know, exciting front three. I would, you know, with something like Dele Alli, maybe even be behind them three. Eric Dier sat in front of the back four, protecting them, and if he could be a bit more disciplined. And then have a Lallana there. So you've got a very attacking formation. I know there's going to be a lot of people listening probably thinking I'm mad saying that, but I would rather see a more attacking sort of style and more attacking play from England, I would.
Interesting you mentioned Adam Lallana, because I believe he's probably England's most technically gifted player in that squad at the moment. Now, do you think that England should base their game around him?
Do you know what? It's a tricky one, Adam, because I'm a Liverpool fan, and he's flattered to deceive at times at Anfield, and I've watched, like last season I went about seven times and watched him, and he can do nothing for 60 minutes and then he produces a wonderful goal, and it's frustrating at times because it's Saints built a team around him, like you said. Saints Southampton had a team built around him. He was a big fish, but he's gone to Anfield and he's found it hard to adapt to Brendan Rodgers' style. He got a lot of injuries, and then Jurgen Klopp, he's been in and out of the team under Jurgen Klopp at times has tried to build a team around him, I feel, and then he's flattered to deceive. So for England, it's interesting subject. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. He isn't technically, you know, probably one of the most talented players England have got at the minute. But, I mean, how many times is it over in the summer as well? It was frustrating watching him because he didn't really do it for me in the tournament, personally. It's a shame. I don't know if we need a bit, like you said, build a proper team around him. But who do you leave out? Who do you accommodate for? And it's an interesting subject.
And Adrian, talk to me about Lallana, because in my opinion, I think he looked like one of the only players in that England squad that could actually do anything in the summer. You know, he seemed like a live wire. He seemed like he was always there to create opportunities in and around the box. What do you make of him?
I've got to admit, at this stage, I'm a big member of the Lallana fan club. I used to work for the local paper in Southampton when I started my journalism career, and Lallana at the time was in the youth team, so I sort of followed his career since then, and I'm a big fan of his. I agree with what you say. Technically, wonderful player to watch. I was so happy when they got to the Premier League just to see him on the big stage. His first touch, the Cruyff turns, you know, inside of his foot, outside of his foot, his ability to use both feet. It's so effortless. You watch him, and you know, you don't know. You could argue you don't know which is his best foot. But when you get to the age he's at now, which I think is 26, 27, I think what you're looking for is maybe more a product for somebody of his ability. But yeah, wonderful player to watch. Whether he's a player to sort of build your side around, I'm not so sure. I think that's something you maybe do with a Dele Alli, or maybe a Marcus Rashford to get the best out of somebody like that. I kind of feel Lallana's a bit more of a player on. Not the edges of the game in terms of his contribution, but just as a wide player or somebody more likely to play from a wider area. I wonder if it's a little bit difficult to build a team around. I mean, the other thing is as well, you know, I mentioned Rashford, I mentioned Ali, Chuckin, Sterling, you mentioned Barkley. There's so many good young players. Do you even really need to build the side around one player? Or is it a case of just getting all these talented young players to work together?
Now, Jay, you mentioned before you're a Liverpool fan, and being a Liverpool fan, I'm sure you rate Jordan Henderson. So what is it about him that makes him an ever-present in the England squad?
Well, for me, whenever I watch Jordan play for Liverpool, he does a disciplined job. You know, he's not for me, he is like a sort of, you know, what you get from him, 8 out of 10, 7 out of 10 every week, you know. He can pass the ball sideways, he's got a good range of passing. For me, you know, he didn't score enough anymore. When he was at Sunderland, he'd pop up with a goal. For me, at Liverpool, he didn't score enough. He could do a bit more scoring for England and Liverpool. But obviously, a lot of fans on social media, they really criticised him. Obviously, when there's, you know, rumours that he could get the armband ahead of Rooney, he was getting faked on social media. But I don't know why. For me, I can't see why England fans have got a bit of hate towards him. But I'm a big Jordan Henderson fan, but. Like I said, he could bring a bit more attacking play and a bit more goals to his game, which I'm hoping Klopp will try and bring that out. Whereas Brendan Rodgers, for me, didn't get enough attacking. You know, don't forget Sunderland used to score a lot of free kicks, didn't he, from out far.
That's right, yeah.
But under Sam, I don't know if he's going to be a long-term fixture under Big Sam. You know, I really got a feeling still that he could be on the bench a lot, really could, coming on for half an hour to shore up the 1-0 win. That's what I can see a lot of England scorelines being.
So, Scotland and Wales started their campaigns with emphatic wins. Now, Gordon Strachan's men may have trounced Malta 5-1, but that's a flattering scoreline. Now, Adrian, a win is a win at the end of the day, mate, but Caruana's sending off changed the game a little, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I think, as you said, a win is a win. They obviously were pulled back to 1-1 at one stage, Scotland. And I just the interesting thing I think with Scotland is obviously with them missing out on the Euros in the summer, you kind of felt a little bit sorry for them in some way. You know, everyone else was having fun. I say fun. Watching England wasn't that much fun, but everyone else was kind of out in France anyway, and you felt a little bit sorry for Scotland coming up short and not making it. So for them, I think it was just ideal to get off to that winning start, get their campaign off on the right foot. And at the moment, they're sitting top. I mean, obviously, it's only top of the group that are guaranteed to go through. So, you know, for everyone, England, you think are favourites in group F, but for everyone else, you just got to pick up those wins. And in those pivotal games for Scotland, you know, just hope that they can get a point, maybe hold England and see where they go from there, really.
Absolutely. And Jay, Wales did the whole school bullying thing whereby they beat up Moldova, took their lunch money in the process. Do you think Wales' performance at the Euros has raised expectations?
Yeah, I do. I think definitely. Wales impressed me at the Euros. I mean, I was out there at France and, you know, I was hoping to catch a couple of games with Wales, but I didn't in the end. We'd come back, but I followed them closely and they played really well. They obviously exceeded expectations. They're not as big as, obviously, fat population-wise as England. But I think now they had to make a statement, you know, against Moldova. And they did. But it was interesting listening to the Sky team last night, the sort of brief afterwards. And Ian Saunders and that were saying about, we'll take Gareth Bale out. How well would we do? And it's an interesting subject because Gareth Bale bullied. Last night he was unplayable. You know, I saw the highlights. Wales, they didn't change. I don't think they changed much from the start of the lineup from what they used at the Euros. They kept their same shape. And Sam Vokes was again brilliant. You know, won every duel. You know, bullied the back four. He did. And I think they've got to qualify. They've got to qualify outright, or you know, they're going to get sort of disappointment and, you know, and unrest if they don't, but that's my opinion.
You mentioned there just about expectation raising for Wales. It was very interesting to hear Chris Coleman in the build-up to that game against Moldova talking about now everyone else's awareness of what Wales can do, you know, has also been heightened as a result of what they did in the Euros. So they're no longer just a side that anyone may be taking lightly, which may have happened, you know, before the Euros. Obviously, you know, in their qualifying campaign, they beat Belgium once. I think they got a 0-0 draw. Out in Belgium, he wondered if they'd be able to get similar results this time around because, you know, no one's going to be looking at Wales as a soft touch as maybe they were in years gone by.
I think now a lot of... I didn't expect them to beat Moldova 4-0 last night. I thought it was going to be a tight 1-0 win. So for me, it's surprising that Moldova was so open and you know, I'm surprised that Moldova didn't give it a bit more of a go. Maybe Moldova, obviously they are poor, they're not a very good nation, are they? But I just thought maybe... Yeah, it was going to be a bit tighter than that, but I think you see when Wales go to travel away in this group, I think they will struggle at times to break teams down because I think now everyone knows, like you said, what Wales are about. But I still expect them to qualify. If they get an injury to Gareth Bale, which could happen, you know, it'd be interesting to see where they progress without him because they haven't really been tried, have they, without Gareth Bale at all lately.
That's right. I think he's only 4 goals away from Ian Rush's record, isn't he?
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah. But you mentioned Moldova. I think, was it, they've lost 14 of their last 20 games, but I think they've only conceded like 26 goals, so they're not leaking, are they, really?
Yeah, which, for one of the smaller nations who you kind of expect, you know, when you see their name in the qualifying campaign, you think they're one of the smaller nations who do keep getting rolled over, but that's not a bad defensive record, and following on from that, shows how well Wales did to perform past them last night.
Absolutely. And are you guys surprised that he stuck to a 3-5-2? Because it just seemed that that's a tournament formation, isn't it?
Possibly, but he knows it works. Yeah. And he's got his players, you know, he's got the players for the system. You know, it's an interesting formation. We don't see that much over here. For example, in the Premier League, remember Van Gaal trying it a couple of years ago and it didn't really work. So Chris Coleman has got it to work, and he's got the players who make that system work. So I suppose it's a case of if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Wasn't it Roy Evans that tried it first as well at Liverpool? I think you had Bjørnby and Rob Jones at fullback at the time, didn't they, wing-backs?
Yeah, I mean, Chris Coleman uses one of his fullbacks in that position. I think he uses Ben Davis there.
That's right, yeah.
At times. So it's a way to you know, shoehorn certain players into a formation.
Absolutely. Okay, so Northern Ireland earned a draw in the Czech Republic, while the Republic's first game since Robbie Keane's retirement ended in a 2-2 draw against Serbia. Adrian, with the greatest of respect to Shane Long, Jonathan Walters and Daryl Murphy, none of them will really reach the dizzy heights Robbie Keane did at international level. Aside from Courtney Duffus at Everton and maybe Reece Gregor-Cox, who I believe is on QPR's books, I can't see where the next Irish goal poacher is going to come from. Are we going to see another Clinton Morrison-esque nationality switch?
Well, who are you suggesting? Who could they pluck? Put me on the spot there. I mean, Shane Long is somebody we've seen a fair bit of in the Premier League. And towards the end of last year, he was in great form, Shane Long, and was late in his career. Again, I think he's another one who's sort of late 20s. And he seemed to all be putting it together. I remember watching Southampton at Tottenham, and he gave Jan Vertonghen and Toby Alderweireld towards the end of the season, you know, a real game as a lone striker. I remember speaking to Ray Houghton in the build-up to the Euros, and he was saying, you know, this tournament is one that, you know, Shane Long could be one of the players to emerge as a star of the tournament. That didn't quite happen. And obviously, you know, you look at how long Robbie Keane has been doing it, or has done it, should I say, now he's retired, had done the business for the Republic of Ireland on the biggest stage. You know, Shane Long is not going to be getting anywhere near his goal record now. But Shane Long could possibly, you know, maybe it's a bit late, but Shane Long is probably the one they're looking at the moment.
Yeah.
To be the one who can sort of take on the mantle. But it's a big ask, you know, somebody to take on the mantle of a legend, of Robbie Keane. You'd think maybe they'd be an Irish wonder kid, but they're not there at the moment, so they're going to have to rely on what they've got.
Absolutely. Okay, moving on to domestic matters now, and the transfer window closed last Wednesday night, thank goodness. The two biggest deals on deadline day were Moussa Sissoko to Spurs and David Luiz's return to Chelsea. However, loan moves for two England internationals stole the headlines. Jay, Hart to Torino isn't something most of us would have expected to see 3 or 4 years ago now. Interestingly enough, he's now challenging a former Liverpool goalkeeper for the number one spot, that being Daniele Padelli, who spent 6 months at Anfield in 2007 under Benitez. Is this an opportunity for Hart to put himself in the shop window, or do you think he has a future at City when the loan ends?
Do you know what? It's an interesting subject, isn't it? Those two loan moves. And Hart, I find it amazing that I touched on this yesterday, actually, in the Sky Sports film, and about Joe Hart. He's in a position where he has a choice of Sunderland and Torino. You know, allegedly, that's the two clubs. And I find it flabbergasting that England's number one, and he has consistently been England's number one for a number of years now, was left either to go to one of those two or sit on the bench at Man City. And I think it'll put himself in the shop window, and I can expect him to leave to a Premiership club, I think, next summer. I think that he obviously doesn't want to be sat on the bench at City. He wants to be playing. He has to be playing because Jack Butland will be back fit, and he's breathing down his neck. Jack's a quality keeper who I rate highly, who long-term take the number one position if he stays fit. But I'm a Liverpool fan. I actually wanted Joe Hart. We were linked with him, and I thought we might be able to pull it off. But from what I reckon is that he's probably obviously wages are astronomical, you know, even compared to what Liverpool would be prepared to pay for a number one keeper, because he's not long had a new deal, had he? So I think he's probably pushing nearly £200,000 a week with wages. And Torino probably paid a big sum to have him as a loan fee to Man City. Whereas, you know, I just find it flabbergasting that no one bigger really came in for him, if I'm honest. Actually, astounded.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, at first, I actually believed the same thing as you, in the sense that, you know, £200,000 a week, do teams want to spend that much money? But then again, if he's as good as people think he is, then surely clubs are going to take that punt. You know, if he's going to keep clean sheets and keep them in the games and save them 10, 15 points a season, fair enough. But there's a little edge that I've, you know, thought about for the past few days. I'm thinking, well, maybe Premier clubs didn't want to take a punt on him because they might see him as a bit of a gamble in the sense that he gets a lot of media attention and they don't want that. I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it.
I sort of must be something, like you're saying, Stella, there must be something that's going on that we don't see, why there's not more clubs fighting after him. You know, I actually expected when Pep came in, I thought Pep is not his sort of player. He likes to keep us to play out from the back, and Joe's not renowned for that. And I thought his days would be numbered, and I was actually thinking, you know, realistically in the Premier League, there's only been Liverpool, Everton, and, you know, really, from the elite, who would go for him. Because, you know, look at Arsenal, Chelsea, Man United, you know, Southampton, they've all got established quality keepers, and who I don't think, you know, you'd replace for Joe Hart. But saying that, I still do think, look at the stats, in the last few years, he has been in the top two or three of the keepers in the Premier League and up there in Europe. I still rate him highly, even though he had a bad summer. But I just, something must be, like you just said, this must be something maybe the media attention gets. Must be something that's putting other bigger clubs off, and no disrespect to Torino or Sunderland, you know, that is. It's an interesting subject. You could talk all day about Joe Hart move. You know, I'm just astounded. Random, isn't it, going to Serie A?
Yeah, I know.
I think there's a couple of things there. One thing I certainly agree with Jay is, yes, he's England number one, but if you look at the bigger sides in the league, Joe Hart isn't better than David De Gea. He's not better than Thibaut Courtois. Not better than
I agree with you.
You know, Liverpool have got high hopes for Karius, the goalkeeper they brought in the summer. Obviously, out with a broken hand for a while. I think he's on the way back soon. So, you know, that's probably another avenue closed. You bring Joe Hart in, and then you've got Mignolet, what, third choice? But, you know, possibly third, that's not going to happen. So maybe his best hope would have been Everton, I think. But Steckenberg there is a favourite of Ronald Koeman and started the season well. So in the Premier League, he wouldn't have had too many choices from that side of things. On top of that, I couldn't imagine Man City wanting to loan, you know, even if one of those clubs did have a vacancy, in the same way that Arsenal wouldn't have wanted to loan Jack Wilshere to one of the bigger sides in the league. I can't imagine Man City would have wanted to loan Joe Hart to one of the sides, possibly challenging them.
Yeah.
Who would have been challenging them for the title.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Then, you know, again, in the same way that the big clubs in the Premier League have got, you know, top quality goalkeepers, so are the biggest sides in Europe. So I don't think he would have had too many options, even if you take out how much his wages. You know, Man City were prepared to subsidize his wages, to help him get a move. So that almost takes out that factor. It's just a simple fact. There are a lot of all the big clubs have got top goalkeepers already, many who are at least on a par, if not better than Joe Hart.
Yeah. And the thing is, personally, I think he made a couple of high-profile mistakes at the Euros. You know, I'm not saying that his confidence is damaged or dented in any way, but at the same time, some managers might be thinking, is it worth, you know, taking a risk on him? Is his confidence in jeopardy? I mean, you look at Rob Green, he made one mistake for England and he never played again.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? When you're under England, it's never pressure. Same with managers, it's sort of a poison chalice, you know. Like for Kevin Keegan, didn't do anything, you know, really. You know, Glenn Hoddle, it's ruined his managerial career. Steve McClaren's had, you know, little success, a little bit in Holland, but apart from that, domestically in England, he's had a appalling record since England. And same with players, isn't it? Once you make one bad mistake or one error, you sort of, you're castated in the press and you're never forgiven. Yeah. And then it sort of knocks your confidence. I think you could be right, actually. You could hit it nail on the head with Joe Hart. There might be no way back. His body language certainly, in the media and the press, has been like negative and very depressed and very, you know, sort of not interested, hasn't it? But what I believe is, from what I've been told, that he just wants to play football at any level, you know.
Adrian, what have you noticed about Joe Hart? You're out there with the England squad. Did you notice anything different about him?
Well, to be honest, Joe Hart kept, quite a low profile, sort of in the build up. There were, last week at St George's, there were a number of players put up for interview, across the print media, certain newspapers, and the radio and TV, about eight or nine. And I suppose, I mean, Joe Hart was sorting out his move, so that kind of limited his involvement in that day, and then he came back afterwards. So there was no chance to speak to him then. But I believe he kind of arranged to speak to one section of the media after the game on Sunday, And I think the FA had given that the all clear, and you know, the thumbs up and said, yeah, you're fine to speak. But he ended up just walking past with the journalist, so maybe didn't want to answer questions about maybe move and maybe get himself into a tricky situation, possibly there with anything he may have said. In terms of how he played, a couple of nervy moments, and I'm sure everyone who was watching would have seen the kick he scuffed quite early on in the first half. You know, given all the attention that's been on the reason why Guardiola has kind of given him the elbow, you know, it's all about his distribution or concerns. One of the concerns has been about his distribution. That was a bit of a, oh, so that's why Pep's doing it. But other than that, he didn't really have too much to do on Sunday on the pitch. I just think maybe him dodging the interviews was probably the most eye-catching thing in some ways. It was almost like he just wants to get his head down and just play for the time being and not talk.
Yeah. Well, at Torino, he's got a coach who's got, well, should I say, had a very cultured left foot in the Mihailovic, so he might learn a thing or two about distribution, right?
He might do, and I suppose the other thing is as well, I mean, you asked at the start whether he's got a future at Man City. I must admit, I don't believe he has, because, I was made aware sort of the start of the year, really, when it was pretty clear that Guardiola was getting a job, that Guardiola was looking at Joe Hart's situation and had concerns. Guardiola's played the situation quite well because he kind of left the door open for Joe Hart and effectively said, if he wants to stay and learn to play my way, then he could have a future here. But to do that, he's going to have to start on the bench.
That's right.
You know, someone like Joe Hart is not going to sit on the bench until he gets the green light for Guardiola to say, yes, okay, you fit my philosophy. He's going to want to get out and play. In terms of whether he'll end up coming back to City, very much depends on what he learns under Mihailovic at Torino, and if he ends up being showing more better signs than he has already, that he's capable of playing the way that Guardiola wants him to play.
Absolutely. Now, Adrian, I'm starting to think there's some sort of ghost of Gazza jinx, whereby every playmaker England has produced doesn't make much of an impact at international level. I mean, if you look at Paul Scholes, Joe Cole, and even Frank Lampard, three perfect examples. Now, Arsenal have spun Jack Wilshere's loan move to Bournemouth for some sort of career rehabilitation programme, but something tells me there's a lot more to it than that. What do you think?
Well, I've personally thought Jack Wilshere was in trouble for a little while, just because you look at Coughlin coming through in the last sort of 18 months, 2 years. Last in January, I think it was, when Elneny came in, Mohamed Elneny from Basel. And then in the summer, when Granit Xhaka comes in from Borussia Mönchengladbach for 35 million. That is, that was Arsene Wenger, certainly with the last two, buying two midfielders who, if you look at their history, are very reliable fitness-wise, play a lot of games. And it's just got to the point with not just Jack Wilshere, but Aaron Ramsey, Oxlade-Chamberlain playing in the middle, because Cazorla's obviously had a long period out last season. That's Arsene Wenger basically saying, I can't rely on the crop of central midfielders I've got at the moment. I need to go out and buy midfielders who I can rely on to stay fit and help me build a team and get some consistency in my team. So he's given Wilshere, as talented as he is, and understandably, he's given Wilshere every opportunity to prove his fitness and effectively cement a place in the Arsenal side and be a player that he builds his team around. And it's just got to the point where I'm sure he would have happily kept Wilshere because Wenger's a sort of manager. He doesn't really like confrontation. So he wouldn't have bombed Wilshere out off his own back. He would have been, it has been a situation, I think, where Wilshere has come to him saying he wanted to play football, and it's ended up with him, going out on loan. Yeah. Whether it's a chance to rehabilitate his career, I think if he shows he can stay fit, that's probably the biggest thing more than anything else. I don't think there are any doubts about Wilshere's ability, his talent. He was a golden boy, the great midfield hope for England for a reason. It's just his fitness. That's the only thing he's really got to prove.
Absolutely. And Jay, Liverpool finally have Mario Balotelli off their payroll. Are you happy to see him leave?
Do you know what? I've always been a big Balotelli fan, but it's just been frustrating that Liverpool haven't benefited from his potential, because Mourinho gave him a chance at Inter Milan and had high hopes for him. If Mourinho can't get anything out of him. I don't know who can. You know, he might go and shock us all and end up top scorer in the French league with Nice. But I mean, it's very frustrating. It was a very expensive move for us with Balotelli, and he's similar to Wiltshire, though, isn't it? Wiltshire's they both just haven't done it. You know, for club or country, really. And I'm just glad. Yeah, I'm glad we got off the payroll. But I'm frustrated we didn't see more of him. You know, when he joined, I was excited because I thought he actually may produce and do something special at Liverpool. But sadly, not being that. But he's an interesting character. Actually, I've met him once. He's very funny. He's very generous. You know, he's a very, very funny personality.
Such a frustrating player, Mario Balotelli. I mean, I don't know how many more chances he's going to get across Europe at big clubs. You know, he's played for the two Milan clubs, not done it there. Not done it consistently or proved to be a character. And I say a character as much as a player that they can rely on to effectively behave himself. Two of the biggest clubs in England, Liverpool, Man City, again, you know, forced out effectively, you know, sold willingly and happily in the end. I mean, how many more chances does a player get? 26 now.
Yeah, you're right, Adrian, aren't you? I mean, it's just frustrating to see, isn't it? Because, I mean, I've read a lot on him and recently, in the past sort of couple of weeks, and a lot of interviews have been done about him, people who've worked with him or played with him, and it's just frustrating. Everyone keeps saying that he's got so much potential, but I forgot he's actually 26. I thought he was still only about 22, 23, but obviously he's been around for so long. He's getting on now, isn't he? He's in the Last Chance Saloon.
Yeah.
Well, he had an outstanding Euro 2012, and those goals against Germany, you know, he was unplayable that day. But I just don't understand what goes on in some people's heads. I mean, look, aside from the financial rewards from being his agent, you'd be pulling your hair out, wouldn't you, if he was on your books?
I'm not sure, you know, because his agents mean no well, so I'm not sure that he would be pulling his hair out.
If he keeps getting his money,
he might be happy.
Good shout, yeah. Good shout.
I mean, the frustrating thing about him is that... You know, like you said, as an agent, you would, you know, obviously, they're thinking, Real is just not worried. He knows you get him a move, you get X amount of his wages, etc. But for a neutral, you know, as a football fan, like Adrian just said, I don't know, I think if this goes wrong in France, you know, but Nice seems to be the sort of football club where everyone rehabilitates their career, like, you know, and Ben Arthur had a wonderful season last year, and a couple of other players have French outcasts who have gone there and done well. But I think if he messes up here, he could end up at China or something, or America. That's where I can see it ending if he's not careful, you know. But it just seems maybe it's the people around him, you know, like not just his agent, but the people around him who are with him 24/7. You know, because another frustrating one quickly is Ravel Morrison. You know, what a talent he is!
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, Rio Ferdinand's a massive advocate of him. He's one of the best midfielders that he's trained with. And I'm a massive Ravel Morrison fan. And I'm just surprised, again, he hasn't just made more of his ability. It's just frustrating, isn't it, as a football fan? I suspect you must be like that, Adrian. Must be the amount of players you've come across and thought, what's going on in their head?
Yeah, I mean, you took the name. I was just going to say Morrison as well, you know, and I was going to say the phrase frustrating, or the word frustrating, because that's what it is, you know. You'd love to see, you think of Morrison now and the ages, you know, he should arguably be in that England side.
Definitely.
And, you know, we as much as him, obviously, he's suffering the most from not having made the most of his ability, but we as football fans, we as a country are being deprived of a player of, you know, incredible talent. You hear us, Sir Alex Ferguson talked about him. You mentioned Rio Ferdinand there. You know, Rio Ferdinand and Leon Knight, again, I mentioned him again. They were having a debate not too long ago on Twitter about who was the better player, you know, Joe Cole, who Rio Ferdinand would have played at a youth level at West Ham, or when they were younger, sorry, West Ham, and then Ravel Morrison, who he obviously would have seen come through their ranks at United. And Ferdinand was adamant it was Morrison, you know. That shows how good a player and how big a talent he had. So,
right,
you know, you can see the years go on. It's such a shame to see him not able to show the world that talent. We only saw it in glimpses when he came on loan at West Ham. Obviously, the other day he scored that goal from the halfway line against Tottenham at White Hart Lane. Unbelievable goal. You know, he's a right-footed player dribbling the ball with his left foot from the halfway line and thinking it over the goalkeeper. But, you know, it's something's not quite right, unfortunately. with his head and his mentality and his attitude that allows him to knit it all together and produce on a consistent basis. And it's the same with Balotelli.
I totally agree with you. And it's, do you remember another name that was, I think he's out in Belgium still, is John Bostock?
Yeah.
What the heck? Like, he signed for Spurs, didn't he, after leaving Palace? That's and, like, what the hell's happened to him, you know?
I think Bostock's, I remember Bostock, I think his first touch in professional football, I don't think he's 15 at Palace, was a no-look pass. And you just thought, wow, who's this kid? Well, I mean, I'd say you thought who's this kid, you heard a lot about him, but, you know, he showed a lot about his ability, his confidence to step on the pitch and do that. But Bostock, in fairness to him, I think he's just trying to rebuild his career away from the glare of English football. He seems quite suited to
Belgium.
Well, I think he's in France now with Lens, if I remember correctly, after having a spell in Belgium, as you say. And he seems to be doing okay. I think the one thing you would say about John Bostock is he seems happy with his football and with his career, which is maybe what you can't say or you wouldn't say about Morrison and Balotelli. And I think there's something to be said for that. If Bostock is happy with the level he's at and to be enjoying his football again after a tough time at Tottenham, then there's something to be said for that, I think.
Absolutely, but you mentioned Ravon Morrison. I think he got cleared of threatening to throw acid in his ex-girlfriend's face or something like that. I think it's the off-the-field shenanigans that gets him into trouble. And look, Ravon Morrison had, I don't know if he still does, but he had a bit of a shady past, do you know what I mean? So I think that was one of the reasons why Ferguson was happy to let him go. Bostock, I don't really know too much about, but, you know, yeah, he was touted as the next best thing, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, yeah. Chris Palace debut 15.
That's right,
John Bostock, and possibly the wrong move. You know, looking back, I can't remember reading any interviews with him about what he thinks about whether it was a wrong move. But you know, a lot of loan spells in there: Brentford, Hull, Sheffield Wednesday, Swindon. So he did get out a fair bit, and I remember him scoring a goal for Hull. I think.
Brilliant goal it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I remember him scoring. I think it may have been a goal from a corner while he was on a loan at Brentford, or a spectacular goal springs to mind. Just didn't quite work, maybe that move to Tottenham and it's just set him back. But he seems to be getting back on the right path, and you know, he's still young, 24, so maybe there'll be a move back to England at some point for him. Mm.
Wasn't he at Toronto at one point? Or was that someone else?
He was, yeah. Short loan spell there as well.
Brilliant.
Do you know what, back Jack Wilshere, do you not think, I'm from Bournemouth, and you know, I hope they do well, but I can see him more fighting relegation this year. I've got a feeling teams will find him out, and he's got off to a bad start. And I've got a feeling Jack's not going to. I've got a feeling Jack's going to flop there. I really have. I've got a feeling he's going to be at crossroads.
Well, he had the same problem that I was mentioning earlier on about Joe Hart. You know, Arsenal simply wouldn't let him go to a side who were going to be challenging up at the top of the table. So you know, in some ways, if he did want to be challenging for trophies, pushing for European football, going abroad might have been a better move for him. But he chose Bournemouth. He would have known what he was getting into. You know, a lot's been made about his good friend, his best friend from the U team days at Arsenal, Benik Afobe, being down there.
I think that's a bad influence because, you know, Bournemouth's good for the nightlife.
And he
was allegedly out on Saturday after the AC Milan game. I know it's a friendly testimonial, but I just think the team that your old mate used to party with and be in the paper a lot with, I just think it's a for me, it's an unbelievable move. Obviously, to see Bournemouth pull it off, but I just think it's a no. If I'd be advising him, I'd be saying, let's get abroad, get out all the press, concentrate on your career and get it back on track, you know. But I think I've got a feeling it's going to end in, I've got a feeling it's going to end in tears badly as well. I've got a feeling he's going to get, you know, I don't know, but that's my opinion. I've got a feeling it could end sour there at Bournemouth.
The onus is on Wilshere to make it work. And if it doesn't, it will be down to him, and he'll be the one who loses out. So, you know, if things like that are happening and affecting his football, having a detrimental effect on his football, then when the season ends, if he doesn't do enough to impress Wenger, then and everyone at Arsenal, then he'll only have to look at, you know, he'll only have himself to blame.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, you mentioned Bournemouth possibly being in trouble, Jay. I think the difference between this season and last season is last season they brought quite a few experienced players in. They brought in Boric, Distan, I think Max Gradle, I think was he 28 at the moment, and Glenn Murray. Whereas this season they brought in fairly inexperienced players like, you know, your Lewis Cooks, your Jordan Ives. I think with Wilshere coming in, he gives you that experience. You know, he's won FA Cups, he's played in Europe, he's played international level. Perhaps he's the player that they need to take on that next step. I know that back in the last season they kind of faded away, didn't they? But they reached that 40-point mark, and usually teams, you know, go into holiday mode when that happens, doesn't it? You know, they get the deck chairs out and whatnot. Yeah. But I still think there's three teams worse than them this season, to be fair.
Do you know what? I think it's going to be tight. I think there's going to be teams going down on, maybe 34, 36 points. I can't see at the minute anyone's getting stranded, if I'm honest, like drift away like Aston Villa did. I personally can see Bournemouth struggling for this instance. Eddie Howe is a great manager, but he's got no plan B. Second end of the season, teams found him out. That's why they struggled as well. Yeah, they did have some of their sort of like sandals on ready for the summer. You can call that expression, flip-flops on ready for the beach. But I think they still need a bit more experience. Wiltshire, for me, not the right experienced player to have in there. I think he's not got that winning mentality for me, Wiltshire. I know you've got a massive fan base, a lot of potential, but a year ago, 18 months ago, it was only Man City who linked with 50 million for him, weren't they?
Yeah, and
let's be honest, at the end of the day, no matter what you say, if he was that good, regardless of what Solinger, a Premiership rival, if he was that good and the money was on the table, he would have been gone. You know, Wenger's kept Walcott, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Ramsey, all these other players who had massive fitness issues, he kept them on board. I think there's something gone on behind the scene, and Wenger's had enough now. Can't get him out the door permanently. He's got him on loan, and then maybe in January or end of season, I think he'd be gone for good. I don't think there's no way back for him at Arsenal. I really don't.
I think the thing with Wilshere, though, that compared to those other players, is he's asked as much to go out on loan as much as Arsenal thought it's a good idea. I'm sure if Chamberlain and Walcott were in the same situation, where they were effectively saying, "Am I going to get enough games?" and the answer coming back was, "You're not going to start every week," and then they replied, "Okay, can I go out on loan?" they may have found themselves in the same situation. Picking it out to go out.
But did he ask to go out on loan? That's the thing. He hasn't come out and said in an interview, unless I've missed it, come out and said, "I actually asked to go out on loan and request a transfer."
It wasn't something that he's come out and said in an interview, but, they've had the talks, and that was where he was coming from. Am I going to get out? If not, can I go out on loan?
I actually think the opposite, honestly do. I think he's been forced. I think he's been told, "You're either going to sit with the kids for the season," because he's been partying too much. He looks unfit. I've seen the highlights of the Bournemouth AC Milan. Mm. He has some nice glimpses, some nice touches, but he looks like he's carrying a bit of weight. He's not sharp enough for me. I just personally think that he has been told he's either going to rot in reserves this season, or he goes out and plays on loan, and he's not going to a top four club. And that's why I would have gone AC Milan or Roma and gone out and proved a point and knuckled down. And, sort of had a good season about and tried to, get many goals. And that's another thing, he's not scoring enough, has he, the last couple of years? He's not scored enough for me. Everyone called him the next Gazza. And, for me, he wouldn't even be in the 23 Premier League squad.
The thing is, I think Arsenal have given up with him. I mean, the amount of injuries that he's had, a Malleola injury, he's been out for so many games. I think didn't he have a hairline crack in his calf bone? He missed like 47 games or something.
Missed the whole last season. He got it on the day before, 2 days before the Community Shield against, I think it would have been Arsenal Chelsea, and then ended up basically missing the whole of last season. So yeah, that was the hairline fracture.
Yeah, so I just think Wenger thinks enough is enough now. He's 24 years old. Let's see what we can do. If he can up his game and add a few more zeros on his transfer value, then they'll probably sell him next summer. I can't see him returning to Arsenal, to be fair. I think they've just, they've sold it to us to believe that it's for his own good. But really, I just think they want to get more zeros on his value.
A couple of things I would add. First of all, it could be the making of Wilshere. If Bournemouth do do find themselves, as many people expect, to be fighting, obviously, to stay up, which is what you expect they will be doing, it's great responsibility on Wilshere's shoulders to try and guide them out of a situation. Yes, he's never been in it, but he comes there with a wealth of experience at the very, very highest level with England and Arsenal in the Champions League and at the top end of the Premier League. Could be the making of him, that move.
Absolutely.
Well, like, you know, we could all talk all night about this, couldn't we? I mean, I'm quite strong on the subject that I think that, didn't touch on it properly, but Eddie Howe, you know, he plays his way. He's got no, for me, he's got no plan B. Like the West Ham game, it could have been, West Ham could have, you know, scored five or six. The defence looked like it's always had a goal, you know, always going to concede, it looked like to me. That's my opinion. On the matter, I think that they need a bit more experience. I think they need some more experience up top. Someone also alongside Steve Cook needs someone, you know, like Distan was a great off the pitch, I should imagine, in training. He was fantastic with the younger lads. And also, I think they need a midfield centre enforcer. I don't think Jack Wilshere is the right one. I think Jack might pick up, I don't think he keeps himself fit, because if someone's picking these, a lot of these injuries up, a lot of it is how they look after themselves off the pitch, isn't it? And what they do in their days off and their spare time. And you know, I just think he's one of these persons who doesn't do himself any favours. I could be wrong, but that's my, you know, I'd love to see him do well and win a trophy at Bournemouth, but I just can't see it happening. I can actually see him honestly getting relegated. I don't want it to happen, but I can see it happening.
Time will tell.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, he's got a whole season ahead of him, and it's down to him to show that the move is the right one, and that he can, you know, sort of answer any doubts that there are now. What I would say is a concern in some ways is that Arsenal have now made the break from Wilshere. Obviously, he's one of their academy products. They use the phrase golden boy. He was an Arsenal golden boy as well as an England golden boy. But now they've got themselves into a situation where they feel indispensable. Now, can he repair that break that he's, you know, that first break that he's made from Arsenal? Is that repairable? And that is another thing that time will tell. Or whether he now made that break and you know, will never be able to repair it and come back.
Yeah, he's getting that reputation now of being injury prone. You know, gone is the Darren Anderson sick note. You've got Jack Wilshere, as they call him now. So, you know, he's got a lot of making up to do. But we'll see. We'll see. All right, gents, let's end the show with a quick quiz, shall we?
Yeah, far away.
Brilliant. Right, so far, Rodri Giggs tops the leaderboard with 3 points, while Nick Tanner and Simon Osborne are level with 1 point each. So, gents, these are multiple choice questions, and each one you get correct earns you a point. Jay, I'm going to start with you. Nice and easy one, right?
Yep.
Marcus Alonso moved to Chelsea from Fiorentina, making the Blues his A, second, B, third, or C, fourth English club?
It's his second.
Okay, I'm going to note that down. I'll give you the answers afterwards. Right, number two, Jay. Islam Slimani joined Leicester for a club record fee of £29 million from Sporting, but how many goals did he score for the Portuguese side last season? Was it A, 24, B, 25, or C, 27?
Go for 25.
25, he's gone for B. And finally, Sami Nasri moved to Sevilla on loan from Man City, but how much did Man City pay to sign him from Arsenal in 2011? Was it A, 22 million, B, 25 million, or C, 25.2 million?
I'm going to go for B, 25.
Excellent. Okay. Adrian, your turn, my friend.
Okay.
Okay. Mangala followed Nasri and Hart out of the Man City door on deadline day, but which Belgian side did he start his career? Was he A, Standard Liège, B, Royal Antwerp, or C, Anderlecht?
Who was B, sorry?
Royal Antwerp.
I'm going to go A.
I'm going to go for Standard Liège. Okay. Shane Duffy joined Brighton from Blackburn, but how many own goals has he scored this season? Is it 1, 2, 2, 3, or 3, 4? I should have said A, B, and C, shouldn't I? Confuse the matters. A, 2, B, 3, or C, 4?
3 own goals, so B.
Gone for 3. And Wolves broke their transfer record to sign Monaco striker Ivan Cavalheiro. How much did the Portuguese striker cost them? Was it A, 6.5 million? B, 6.75 million, or C, 7 million?
7 million, C.
7 million, C. Right, okay, Jay. You got, my friend, let's have a look. The first one was B, that's 3, it's his third club. He played for Bolton and Sunderland and Chelsea, and now he's third. Yeah. Islam Slimani scored 27 goals, you said 25. And Sami Nasri, you got right, 25.
So I got one. I think Adrian got all three. I think Adrian got three, right? You know.
Let's have a look. Mangala. Well, his first club was A, Standard Liège. Congratulations. Yeah, that's right. Number two was Shane Duffy. He scored 3 own goals, and you got that one right. And finally, you said C at 7 million, and you were right. So you got 3 out of 3, Adrian. Congratulations.
Yeah, Thank you very much. I'm proud.
Well done, Adrian.
One of my greatest honours. Thank you.
Don't worry, Jay. Next time you come on, you can get more points in that one. Don't worry.
Cheers. I was confident when I heard Adrian's question, what he said, the answers. I thought he'd got all three right.
Hey, it's a tough quiz. I wasn't expecting to be that tough, I must admit.
You've been doing your research on transfer deadline day, haven't you?
Well, I was working the whole day, so I was absorbed.
Keeping yourself, you didn't get any of them, right? Excellent, James. Well, look, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I'm very much looking forward to your next appearance. Would you like to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you on social media?
Okay, yeah. So my social media page is J7Austin. That's my personal page, and then my company is Lucky7PR. That's Lucky and then the word 7 and then PR.
And Jay, tell our listeners more about your company, please, my friend.
Yeah, so basically, it's a talent management and PR and marketing agency, and we look after a number of celebrities and also sports people as well. And we've got like some Team GB athletes, got some lookalikes, and we've got some reality TV personalities, and got some non-league footballers on our books. So basically, yeah, we try and spot up and go in talent before they get very big. And then give them as much exposure. For example, my latest project is the Zlatan Ibrahimovic lookalike, who's trending the world at the minute as we speak.
No, I've seen him on Sky today.
it's been bonkers. We've done interviews in America today, in Dubai, and Talk Sport. We've done so many already today, and after yesterday's exposure to Sky Sports, we've got a lot of massive things coming up this week. You know, I hope to get him on your show actually, because it'd be great to. Great subject to talk sure. about, you know, it'd be great for you.
Bring it on. And listen, I need to commend you for your professionalism, because you do get a lot of negative comments or whatnot, and the way you guys handle things is brilliant, second to none, first class.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, like, the trolls are, don't matter who you are, does it, whether you're, a Premier League footballer or a lookalike or reality TV person, you're always going to get a troll. And there is a lot of negative press about lookalikes at the minute, or negative trolls, should I say, not negative press. And, I've always trained and advised my clients, you know, to try and ignore it. And don't even, just if you ignore them, they go away, and even block them. If you sort of antagonise them and get into an argument with them, it just makes you look stupid and also opens up a can of worms.
Yeah. I find that instead of blocking them, just mute them. Because if you block them, it means they've won. Muting them just means they just don't exist. But yeah, I actually get more offended when it's an egg. You know that picture when it's an egg, when they've done a photograph? I get more offended by that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you're an egg and you're giving me abuse. What?
do you know what was funny though today? Funny enough, we had, so obviously, with lookalikes, not everyone's going to be happy with how they look. You know, not everyone's going to think they look like it. And it's just funny, the comments like, as if Zlatan would walk around in his kit. Now, but what they don't see is that's what we've been told to wear, obviously, because the idea is to make people think he's Zlatan. Yeah. So if you've got the kit on as well, it makes more of an impression. But also, we know that Zlatan's not going to walk around Manchester City Centre with his full kit on in the day. That's just never going to happen in a million years. But it's just funny how people are like thinking that, you know, as if he'd walk around. Of course, we know that. And then we had a couple of sports writers who were verified and work in the media. Like, get involved in a bit of hate today on him, and that's just quite funny to see. You know, like, one of them was like, obviously, he's a bit pasty and needs a bit of a tan. You know, it's you can't win either way. You always get someone who's going to not think that person looks like famous double hanger that they're meant to. But it's all fun and games what we do with the lookalike side of it. And Zlatan is going to be, you know, as Talk Sports said, he's the most famous, they've called him the most famous football lookalike now in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. And Adrian, what about yourself, my friend?
I'm on Twitter mainly. I'm Adrian J. Kajumba. Surname's K-A-J-U-M for mother, P-A. That's probably the best. That's probably the best social media site for me, I would say. And let's not start with journalists and abuse.
Well, which games are you covering this weekend?
This weekend, I'm going to Swansea. A nice trip from Southwest London to Swansea, with a lot of Chelsea fans will be heading the same way. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll see Chelsea 3 out of 3 so far. Well, 4 out of 4, actually, if you include the League Cup game. Making good strides under Conte, looking very impressive. And obviously, they'll have David Luiz and Marcus Alonso, two deadline day signings available for the first time. So it'll be interesting to see if one or both of those are involved as well.
3-5-2, you reckon?
I wonder if eventually he'll play there. He's obviously got the option to now. I mean, with Zuma due back probably in the next sort of 6 weeks, couple of months, he's got some good options there at how he deploys all the centre backs he's got now. That'll give him Cahill, Terry, Luiz to start with, Zuma to come back, and he's also got Ivanovic who can play as a centre back with Alonso in now. You imagine and the money they paid for him, $23 million. You imagine he might move over to the left and Azpilicueta to the right. So he's got good options, and he's now got the option to play the 3-5-2, which he played with Italy and he did with Juventus as well.
Superb. Well, gents, that's all we've got time for this week. Many thanks to my guests Jay Austin and Adrian Kajuba for joining me. We're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence, and we have a Facebook group page with hundreds of contributors, so please feel free to join. Give our friends over at the FNX Network a follow on Twitter at FNX Network and MySportswear at MySportswear1. We'll be back soon. Take care now.